Om Shanti. Just now we heard a beautiful song. Also, let us celebrate a meeting with the Supreme Being. And in order to celebrate this meeting, what is the basis? And what is the method that we have to adopt? That is what we call as Raj Yoga. In Srimad Bhagavad Gita also, God taught Arjuna Raj Yoga. Raj Yoga means the most elevated, highest on high meeting with the most supreme entity, the supreme being, God Himself. And we all wish from our hearts that we would like to celebrate this meeting and enjoy the ecstasy and the bliss to experience that super sensuous joy which was experienced by the gopis when they were having a meeting with Krishna. But there is always a complaint also that the moment we sit down to remember God, the mind is so naughty, it wanders away. And we are not able to focus our mind. We are not able to concentrate our mind on the Supreme Being. So that is when people start giving various titles to their mind. That the mind is like a naughty horse. It is like a monkey jumping from one place to another place. But today we shall see the mind is a beautiful thing, which becomes the most powerful instrument to give us this experience of celebrating the meeting. Where does the mind wander away? Have we ever tracked the mind? Where does it go? And what makes it go? It is always seen that the mind only wanders when there is the naughtiness of the sense organs. When the sense organs are not within our control, it starts taking the mind also along with it. During the day, we may be talking with someone, and in that talk, casually, we say something which we hardly realize at that moment that we should not be telling such things to this person. Afterwards, we get engaged in our karma and we forget. But the moment we sit down and remember God, that is the time when the face of that person emerges in front of the mind's eye. And then I realize, whatever I have said, I shouldn't have said that. If the person will take the whole thing in a different manner, will understand in a different manner, then it will create a great confusion. And there will be such a misunderstanding that will be developed that afterwards it will be very difficult to repair that relationship once it is broken. And now what should I do to rectify my mistake? So we start thinking about that. And the mind has wandered away. Where did it go? When the sense organ, the mouth, was not within my control, the mind also wandered away because of the naughtiness that was shown by the mouth. The same thing with the ears. We sometimes hear some things. As we are passing by, we overhear maybe. After getting engaged in our karma, we forget the whole thing. But as soon as I sit in front of God, I remember the whole thing. Today I heard this. Is it really true? And then I try to analyze the whole thing that I've heard. Not only that, I try to understand it from my own way. And then I realize, oh, I never thought this person could say such a thing for me. And the mind wanders away. Where did the mind go? When the ears were not within my control. When I do not perceive things in the right manner, and whatever I see, as a slave of the sights, my mind would wander away whenever I sit in front of God. And we are trying to concentrate the mind on the Supreme, but we are not able to do it. And sitting there thinking of so many other things, after we get up, we feel as if, well, I'm not satisfied with my prayers. I'm not satisfied with the way I'm remembering God. And there is a dissatisfaction that is created within. We do not enjoy the meeting with God because there was no meeting at all. So, how can we concentrate the mind? For that, first of all, I have to understand what the mind is interested in. What does it enjoy? The mind's best hobby, I would say, is to wander. It would wander in so many aspects. There is no barrier for the human mind. Time and distance cannot be a barrier for the human mind. Anything I want to recollect, the mind would race through time 15 years back and I can recall the whole experience. And I get lost sometimes in that experience. Time does not become a barrier. Or if I have to plan something for the future, the mind would race through time and I start planning for the next 5 years. Similarly, distance also cannot become a barrier for the human mind. A person may be somewhere far off in United States or UK, and if I want to remember that person, the mind can rush through the space and remember that person. So that's just within a fraction of a second. And the whole day we find that the mind is wandering somewhere or the other. It enjoys in wandering. So when this is the hobby of the mind, why don't we use this hobby in meditation also? So we can say meditation is a spiritual journey for the mind. And we take the mind on a journey. A journey into such a way that where we can experience, where the mind can enjoy the meeting with the Supreme Being also, where it can get focused, easily absorbed in the remembrance of the Supreme. Because when it likes to wander, let us take the mind on a journey itself. That is why in the path of bhakti also, the importance of pilgrimages are there. We do a pilgrimage through the body, but actually in meditation, we go on a pilgrimage through the mind. And if this journey is classified into 3 steps, the first step of this journey is what we call as, it's a journey inwards. Where we take the mind within and do some self-contemplation. We contemplate on our original nature, on our original qualities, what is known as self-contemplation. Because it is only through self-contemplation that we can go to self-realization. And when there is self-realization, then there is God-realization. Because self-realization leads to God-realization. And this is where we can enjoy that meeting as well. So the first step when we say self-contemplation, it's a journey within. With my third eye of divine wisdom, I visualize myself. And let the confusions, let the clouds disappear. Till today, this was a question in front of all of us, who am I? And we try to explore, who am I? We try to discover ourselves. Went through various methods, rediscovering the self. But I did not understand what is it that I have to rediscover about myself. Today in the morning sessions, it became quite clear. Who am I? I am not just a spiritual entity. I'm not just a spiritual energy, but I am the embodiment of 7 values. That is why the soul is said to be satoguni. Satoguni means the essence of 7 values. Just as the physical body is the essence of 5 elements of nature. His body is made up of 5 elements of nature, and therefore the body demands the 5 elements of nature for its survival. Similarly, within this body, the spiritual energy, what is it aspiring for? What do we all need in our lives? We all need peace. There is no one who would say, yes, I would like to live in stress. Yes, I would like to live in tension. No, we are never comfortable in a stressful situation. But we always feel relaxed when there is a peaceful environment. Since yesterday you have been here, or maybe 2 days back you have arrived, and there are thousands of people staying here. But still you would feel there is so much of peace in the atmosphere. It is not just the peace of any jungles. A person may go out into the jungle and there also he will experience peace. But there is loneliness in that peace. And he is never comfortable in that loneliness. So he comes back to the city. You go to the cremation ground, And there is peace there as well. But there is fear attached to that peace. If nobody would like to stay there in the cremation ground. Similarly, people may say that you make the mind thoughtless and you'll experience peace. You suppress your thoughts and experience peace. But that's just a state of peace. And we never would like to suppress our thoughts for hours together. It's impossible. For a few moments, yes, it may be possible. But we would not like to be in that state. We never feel comfortable in that state. Where do I feel comfortable? Where there is peace, but at the same time there is inner joy and happiness attached to that peace. While being in the world, while being in relationship with others, still my mind should feel relaxed. And there is the experience of inner happiness, inner bliss. That is the peace I want to experience in my life. Similarly, we all need happiness. There is no one who would say, yes, I would like to stay in sorrow, or I would be comfortable in a sad state. No, we are never comfortable in a sad state. But we are always comfortable when we are in happiness. So these are the 7 qualities that I need in my life. And this is what we pray for to God also. Oh God, give me peace, give me happiness. Oh God, from the darkness take me towards the light. Give the light of knowledge. Give me the wisdom, grant me the wisdom that I need in my life. Oh God, you are the ocean of love and we would like to experience that love. You are the ocean of purity and we would like to purify ourselves. So these 7 qualities, knowledge or wisdom, purity, love, peace, happiness, bliss, and willpower. These are the 7 qualities that we are all aspiring for. Why do I aspire for peace, happiness, bliss, etc.? Because that is my real identity. That is my real form. So stabilizing in that form and taking the mind onto the journey into the depths of these qualities, becoming the embodiment of it and recharging the battery of the self so that I am full with these qualities. So this is the first step of meditation, self-contemplation, which leads to self-realization. The next part of this meditation is, it's a journey upwards. First it's a journey inwards. Then it's a journey upwards. Through self-contemplation, when I stabilize myself in the soul conscious stage, in the present age, people are body conscious. What do we understand by body consciousness? Body consciousness means when the vices are there in the life. When we are empowered by the vices, that is known as body consciousness. So through self-contemplation, I stabilize myself in soul consciousness. And what is soul consciousness? When I become the embodiment of the 7 qualities, the 7 values. And when I realize those qualities, that becomes the base to take the mind on a journey further upwards. And being in the company of the Supreme and enjoying that meeting. So it is said, self-realization leads to God-realization. Without self-realization, without stabilizing in soul consciousness, we can never experience God. If I am in body consciousness, how can I experience God? It's impossible. So when I take the mind on a journey up to the highest heavenly abode or the supreme abode where the supreme being also resides, and being in the company, experiencing the powers of the supreme. Now this is where many people have this question. What is the proof that we are receiving powers in meditation? Because if we know that yes, we are receiving, if there is some proof, definite proof, then there is that inner desire to move forward in meditation also. So what is the proof that we are receiving some power in meditation? The simple example that I can think of is, in the world, we have the rechargeable batteries. And as we use the rechargeable batteries, they get discharged. And then we have to put it again in the charger, connect it to a source. And when the current flows, it is not to be seen. But with the help of the current, after some time, the battery gets recharged. How does it get discharged and recharged? The simple scientific logic says that the chemical components within the battery, as we use them, they get disorganized. And when there is complete disorganization, we call it discharged. It's a discharged battery. Putting it in a charger, connecting it to a source from where the current flows. The current is not to be seen, but if we put the finger there, we'll know, yes, there is a current. But with the help of this current, the chemical components within the battery, they get reorganized. And when they are completely reorganized, we say the battery is recharged. Similarly, if we look at ourselves, our batteries are also discharged. How do we come to know that we are discharged? Because our inner components, they are also not functioning in harmony with one another. They are also not in an organized stage. Sometimes we have such beautiful thoughts. But when we go to express them, something else comes out from the mouth. And when we realize, we have to say, I'm sorry, please try to understand my feelings. Don't look at my words. So in clear words we say, my thoughts are different from my speech and they are not functioning in a harmonious way or in an organized way, so please do not misunderstand me. This is what we say. And then when we come into action, something else happens. And then we say, well, I never thought about this. I don't know how it happened. So that means I've thought something else, I've spoken something else, and practically I've done something else. So is there any organization? And because there is no organization within, that's why there is so much of frustration in life. The frustration is because I want to do something, but I cannot do it. There are some limitations. I want to get certain results, but I'm not able to do it because there is no inner organization. It's not just the three things, the three mechanisms. But we see sometimes the thoughts are in a different wavelength. The feelings are something else. The attitude is something else. The perception is different. The speech is different. The behavior is something else. the actions are something else. So everywhere there is no organization, there is completely disorganization. Therefore, the frustration is created. So meditation is a charger. But just by sitting in silence, we do not get charged. We also have to connect ourselves to the source. And in order to connect the self with the source, we need to have two things, two pins. The mind and the intellect, these two has to be connected to the source, the supreme being. And the current which flows, the power that flows, is not to be seen. It is not that in meditation I start getting visions and I start seeing so many things. That is meditation. No. We don't see anything. But we feel. We feel in our life. We can feel the change in our life. The power that we get in meditation helps me to bring about a change in my life. My inner systems, my inner mechanisms, they start getting reorganized. And we can feel the difference in our life after meditation. Whatever I think, if my thoughts are focused, and my speech will be accordingly, my feelings will be accordingly, my perception will also be accordingly, everything starts getting reorganized. And when there is complete reorganization, that means the battery is charged. And this change is not just by realized by the self, but it is realized by others also. And what do people say? Many people say also, since he has started doing meditation, he has changed a lot. And that is when people feel, since he has started joining this meditation camp, or since he started this Brahma Kumari's meditation, this person has changed so much. Before, he used to get angry on small things. Anger is a weakness. So before, he had this weakness. But now, he is able to control himself. He handles things in a positive way. Instead of getting angry on small things, getting excited on small things, he is able to deal with others in a smoother way. So where did he get this power from? This is the proof that he has got the power and he has been able to overcome that weakness which he was a slave of. The weakness of anger. Many a times people say, I have only one weakness in my life. That I get angry very easily. So that is a weakness. And after doing meditation, if he is able to have this power of peace, if he has developed the power of silence within him, that means he has got the power from where? Before he was not able to control himself. But now he is able to control himself, means he has got the power. So this is the proof. The reorganization. And so the frustration becomes less. The stress level comes down. And we are able to deal things, handle things in a more positive, proactive way. So this is the proof of meditation. That yes, I'm able to bring about this change on the basis of the power. If a person is being more negative, if he's getting worse, that means there is somewhere the connection is not accurate. His meditation is not accurate. This is also seen. And the moment I am able to generate this power in my life, then we go on to the third step, which is known as it's a journey outwards. That when I have gathered that strength, when I have gathered that power starts vibrating into the atmosphere. It starts creating the environment around myself. There is an aura that is created. And this aura gives a very soothing feeling to the self and to others. Whoever comes in connection with us, they also feel so comfortable with us. Like sometimes we go to some people's house and maybe there was a fight going on in that house. There was a debate and discussion going on in the house. And the moment we go, they may all stop. But you can feel, you can sense the vibration. And at that moment we'll say, okay, we shall come later on. And immediately, because you are not feeling comfortable in that environment, you leave. We'll come later. We'll see you later. This is what we say and we move out. But if we go to temples, we like sitting in that atmosphere. We feel so comfortable being in that atmosphere. Here also, when you have come, you feel comfortable in this atmosphere. Why? Why is this feeling? Because of the positive energy which is vibrated into the atmosphere. And this positive energy is vibrated when I have received in my meditation. So all those who do meditation and they release that energy, they vibrate it into the atmosphere. Whoever comes in connection in that atmosphere, they can also feel it. After doing meditation, for some time, we feel like being within ourselves. Many a times we do not even like to come into speech. We like the silence. We like to be absorbed in that silence. But if after meditation, immediately somebody starts getting angry, that means what meditation has he done? He has done no meditation. He was just sitting there wasting his time and his energy. That's all. He did not do any meditation. This is the proof. Because after meditation, if I am not influenced by those qualities, by the power of meditation, then what is the meditation I've done? That is why if sometimes some people, after doing puja and coming out of the puja room and start getting angry upon people, the children also tell them, what puja were you doing? You had these thoughts only in your puja time also? Because after doing puja or after doing meditation, you need to have that power within the self. If you do not have the power, if you have no experience, then what puja did you perform? It was no puja. You were just wasting your time. You are just wasting your energy if you did not gather the power of it. So similarly, meditation, the proof of meditation is that it starts radiating. It creates an aura around us. And we are able to generate those vibrations wherever we go. Whoever would come in our connection, they would also get a very soothing feeling from us. We may not speak anything, but they like being in our company because of the positive energy that is encircling us. They like that positive energy. So these are the three steps, first of all, of meditation. Self-contemplation, enabling us to stabilize in soul consciousness, leading to self-realization, and self-realization leads to God-realization. And when we realize that power of God within ourselves, we are able to vibrate it into the atmosphere. Charge the atmosphere also on the basis of those powers. But in simple terms, how do we do meditation? Meditation is like a telepathic connection. You remember a person and within a few moments, he may just call you. And as soon as you experience this response, You feel so happy. I was remembering that this person and he has called me. And you ask him, why did you call? Do you have any special task? He would say, no, I just thought of you and thought about calling you. No special task. And that is when we feel, I remembered him and this is the response of my remembrance. But sometimes, and with only some people, we have this experience, not with all. With whom do we have this experience that we remember somebody and he immediately responds? Wherever there is a match of the mental frequency. When the two beings' mental frequency is tuned up, with the basis of this tuning, we can experience this response very easily. So, we have to come into the same level to match the mental frequency with human beings. It reminds me of the story of Adi Shankaracharyaji. When Adi Shankaracharyaji wanted to take sannyas, he went to his mother and said, I want to have sannyas. The mother was so much attached to the child. Due to this attachment, she refused. I would never give you the permission to take sannyas. So without the mother's permission, what will Adi Shankaracharya do? So one day his mother went to the riverside to wash some clothes. The small boy also accompanied. And he went into the river to just swim. And suddenly, his leg went into the mouth of a crocodile. So as soon as he realized this, he called out to his mother and said, look, you're not allowing me to take sannyas. Now if the crocodile would finish me, what will you do? So out of the attachment, the mother prayed to God, oh God, please save his life. I would allow him to take sannyas. So the crocodile let go the feet of Adi Shankaracharyaji. He came out and he reminded the mother, you have promised to God now. You will have to allow me to take sannyas. So the mother said, okay, I'll definitely allow you to take sannyas now that I've promised, but I have one desire and you'll have to fulfill that desire of mine. What is the desire? The mother said, when I die, I want to go on your shoulders. My body should go on your shoulders. So Adi Shankaracharya promised, whenever your end time comes, just remember me, just think about me, and I will be here. After that, he took sannyas and he went away miles far preaching. And after so many years, one day he was sitting in his tapasya and he got the vibrations of his mother. He felt as if his mother was remembering him and her end time has come. So immediately he got up from his tapasya, started walking towards his village, and with the power of his tapasya, as if he made his mother stay for some hours. And as soon as he reached his village, went to his home and saw his mother was on the deathbed. So he called out to his mother and said, look mother, I've reached and I'll take you on my shoulders. Don't worry, I'm back. Mother opened the eyes when she saw the child. There was so much of deep satisfaction that she had, and she closed her eyes forever. Now during those days, there was no mobile communication. There was no telephone communication. There was no telegram communication. Which was the form of communication? That was the highest form of communication. The telepathic communication, communication with the power of thoughts. When two people's mental wavelength is linked up, when it is being tuned up, we can get this experience. And many of us have experienced in practical lives also. We think about somebody and he responds. Similarly, meditation means it's a telepathic connection with the Supreme, with the Supreme Being. And just imagine, if you think about the Supreme Being and after some time you feel the response from the Supreme Being, there is such great happiness. Oh, I was thinking about the Supreme. I was in my prayers, I was telling him this thing, and it is there. It seems as if he is listening to our each and every thought. And there is so much of happiness that we have inside that God is listening to me. God is responding to me. And if we have these experiences again and again, there is so much of happiness. If human beings respond to our thoughts and we feel great happiness, just imagine if you remember the Supreme and he responds to your thoughts, what great happiness you will have. So this is meditation. But in order to have this experience, either I have to elevate my consciousness to his level, or either he has to come to my level of consciousness. Then only we can match the frequency level. Then only we are able to tune the frequency level. Now it is impossible for him to come to my level of consciousness. So the easiest thing is to elevate my consciousness level to his state. And for that, I need to stabilize myself in the soul consciousness stage. And when I'm able to elevate my consciousness level from body conscious to soul conscious, then we can easily tune our mental frequency level with the Supreme also. And we can experience that he also listens to my each and every thought and he answers, he responds to my thoughts also. As I said, what is soul consciousness? Soul consciousness means when my thoughts, when my feelings, my emotions, attitudes, perception, utterance, behavior, action, everything is influenced by the qualities, the core values of the soul. Knowledge, purity, love, peace, happiness, bliss, and willpower. So when this qualities, when I become the embodiment of these qualities, that is what I mean by soul consciousness. Then we are easily able to tune ourselves with the Supreme also, because he is the ocean of these qualities and I become the embodiment of these qualities. So this is where we come onto one level and we are able to establish that connection with him. In human beings also, we find when we remember, in simple terms, we can define meditation as a loveful remembrance of God. When we remember human beings, what is the basis of our remembrance? There are hundreds of people we meet every day during the whole day. We don't remember everyone. Whom do we remember? There is some basis of our remembrance also. Mainly there are four bases to remember human beings. The first base is we remember only those whom we are introduced to. So wherever there is introduction, we remember those people. Till now, whenever you are not introduced to Brahma Kumaris, you never remembered Brahma Kumaris. But once you got the introduction of Brahma Kumaris, then you had this thought of going to Mount Abu and seeing what Brahma Kumaris are. So without introduction, there is no remembrance. Where there is some introduction, then there is remembrance. This is the first base. The second base is After introduction, there is a relationship that we come into. And wherever there is relationship, we remember on the basis of relationship. The third basis is, as the relationship grows deeper, we develop love for one another. And when there is love, there is remembrance. Without love, there is no remembrance. And the fourth basis is attainments. If I'm going to attain something from someone, I remember that person on the basis of that attainments. So these are the four bases to remember human beings. And on the four bases, there are four types of remembrances also. Depending upon which percentage is more. So whenever there is just introduction, what type of remembrance do we have? There is efforts that we have to put for remembering those people. Supposing there is an occasion that we have at our place and we would like to invite all those whom we are introduced to. Even each and everyone whom we know, then we would sit down, make efforts to remember each and everyone. Prepare a list so that nobody is left out, and then we send an invitation. So where there is just introduction, the remembrance also needs efforts. There is efforts in that remembrance to remember that person. But wherever there is relationship, what type of remembrance is there? Supposing there is a mother and a child. Now supposing the child is studying in some hostel, staying in some hostel. And one day some news comes from that hostel that the child is sick, he is not feeling well. What will happen to the mother? What type of remembrance would the mother have? The remembrance starts bothering so much. That she is preparing food, but at the back of her mind, whom is she remembering? The child. Sometimes the remembrance bothers her so much that when she goes to sleep at night, she cannot sleep. The thoughts empower her. It bothers her so much, she is not able to sleep. The whole night may pass, she will continuously go on thinking about the child's health. Supposing the next day the child calls, now my health is okay, don't worry. What will the mother say? What will the mother say? Stop worrying immediately? No, the mother says, but I feel that your voice is not still good. She can feel. And then she would decide, let me go and see him finally. Then she would feel relaxed. So wherever there is a relationship, the remembrance also keeps on bothering. But wherever there is love, what type of remembrance do we have? Supposing there is a girl and a boy, they do not know one another. They are not at all introduced. The mind keeps on wandering. What may my companion be like? What type of person he may be or she may be like? So many thoughts come up. But when they are introduced to one another, there is a relationship that they get into. And afterwards, do we have to teach them that now you remember your life companion with love? No. The remembrance is so natural. Whenever they are sitting alone, the mind flows and gets absorbed in the remembrance of the companion. Somebody passes by and you ask them, did you see somebody going from here? What will they say? Sorry, I don't know. But you are sitting here with your eyes open. Such a big man passed from here, you didn't see. Where were you? And the person would say, well, I was absorbed in the remembrance of my beloved. The beloved. She gets absorbed in the remembrance of the beloved. And here if we say, remember God, do meditation with open eyes. Keep your eyes open. Don't close your eyes. And people say, how can we keep our eyes open? There are so many things that distract us, that distract our mind. How can we keep our eyes open in meditation? But when you get absorbed in the remembrance of your beloved, you do not even realize your eyes are open. Things pass by, come, go, and you hardly see anyone. Isn't it? Huh? You may be sitting in a train or a bus, and the bus or the train is moving. People may be passing, calling out. They may be selling things, calling to one another. Somebody comes up, sits next to you, hardly you realize. They have said something, we don't hear to what they have said. Then they would try to distract purposely. And that is when we come down. And if the person asks, where were you? We were absorbed in the remembrance of our beloved. Nothing can distract us. Nothing can break our attention. Nothing can break our concentration. We were so deeply absorbed in the remembrance because there was love. And here when we have this complaint, to concentrate on God is so difficult. Why is it difficult? Maybe because we do not have that much of love for God. That's why we are not able to get absorbed in His remembrance. Isn't it? Or maybe I'm not aware of my relationship with Him. That's why I'm not able to generate that love for Him. And I cannot get absorbed. And wherever there is attainments, what type of remembrance do we have there? There is a businessman, and when he comes to know that there is somebody coming from a certain city, and he is going to stay in that hotel. But if we have a business deal with him, we can flourish in our business, we can flourish in our lives, we can become multimillionaires. But we do not know when he will reach there because he is traveling by road. So he may reach late night also. But once the businessman has come and we get into a business deal with him, then we can become multimillionaires. This is the attainment. Now for this businessman, when he has come to know what he is going to attain in that business deal, do you think he will have sleep? Will he get sleep? Will he tell, okay, let me go to sleep. I don't want to get engaged in any sort of business deal. I don't want to be a multimillionaire. Will he say that? No. He will keep on telephoning that hotel. Has the person arrived or not? If he has to sit the whole night, he will wait for the whole night also. Maybe he will go to the hotel, sit there in its reception so that the first appointment I may get. But once the business deal has been made and he becomes a multimillionaire, does he ever remember him? It's over. So wherever there is attainment, the remembrance is also selfish oriented. The remembrance is full of selfishness. So on the four bases, there are four types of remembrance. Where there is introduction, that remembrance needs efforts to remember someone. Wherever there is a relationship, that remembers keeps on bothering us, sometimes disturbing our sleep also. Wherever there is love, we get absorbed in that remembrance and it gives us so good feeling to be absorbed in that remembrance. We do not wish to come out of that absorption. And wherever there is attainment, there is selfishness in that remembrance. So just look at ourselves. What type of remembrance do we have with God? While remembering God, do we need to make efforts? Does the remembrance of God also bothers us? Do we get absorbed in the remembrance of God? Or is it selfish oriented? What type of remembrance do we have for God? Yes? What is your experience? Yes? No? Mostly it is selfish oriented. We also sometimes make business deals with God, isn't it? We pray to God, "Oh God, if this much thing is practically done in my life, then I'll offer 2 coconuts." Now, this is a business deal. For this task, I will offer 2 coconuts. If you do it, you'll get the coconuts. If he doesn't do the task, he'll not get the coconuts. So isn't it a deal? We fix the price. Suppose it's a bigger task. Then we'll say, okay, I'll offer 101 rupees or 501 rupees maybe or 1000 rupees. We make a deal with God also. And as soon as the deal is over, sometimes we forget also that we have made a deal to pay off this much. Isn't it? It reminds me that once there was a person who lost his diamond ring. So when he realized he has lost his diamond ring, he started praying to God, "Oh God, if you find this ring for me, I'll offer 5000 rupees in the temple." Now within a few minutes only he found the ring. So then he prays to God, "Oh God, I have found it. So the deal is cancelled now." Just imagine. Because now I have found it, I didn't expect to get it so quickly. But now that I have found it so quickly, so the deal is cancelled. This is what human beings' mentality is in today's world. Isn't it? So when there is selfishness, how can we establish that love for Him? There is no love for God. And that is why we all wish, we all have this desire to get absorbed in His remembrance. But it becomes very difficult. And then we blame our mind. My mind is a naughty horse. It jumps from one place to another. It keeps on going and moving around. And I'm not able to concentrate it on God. It's not the mind that is naughty. It is because we are lacking that love for God. Sometimes human being feels, no, we have to be so humble in front of God. So they will pray to God, "Oh God, we are your servers. We are your das. You are the Malik and we are your das." Now what do we really like to be? Do we like to be das or do we like to be the child of God? What is a better relationship that you would like to have with God? Child, isn't it? Because by being a das, we'll never feel satisfied, we'll never feel happiness inside. Because a das is never happy. But sometimes because people feel, oh, we have to show that humility in front of God. So when they go to the temple, they start praying, "Oh God, I am at the foot of your, I'm at your service. I'm a das. Being at the foot, this is my place. I am so foolish. I am so dirty. I am so vicious. I'm like this. I'm like that." This is what we pray in our bhajans, maybe. In our prayers. And as soon as we come out and somebody says, "You are so vicious, you are so wicked, you are so impure, you are so dirty," what do we say? But just now you have mentioned with your own tongue in front of God. You are describing your own self, how you are. Main neech khal kaami paapi. So many bad things we say about the self. And when we come out of the temple and somebody tells us, you are neech, you are papi, you are kami, you are kapti. What do we say? No, I'm not like that. Then we start showing ourselves. So which is my real identity? That which I show to the world or that which I describe myself in front of God? Which is my real identity? Both are ignorance. None of them is the real identity. What is my real identity? If we find that there is a child and a das, when the das comes to the malik, when he comes to the boss, he would say, I would like to have 100 rupees. And you immediately give off the 100 rupees as soon as he is asked. No, you'll ask him, why did you need this money? So, he has given a reason for this money. Now, if you think that this work can be done in 25 rupees only, you'll say, well, I'll give you 50 rupees. Your task will be over in that. But still, if somebody demands some more from you, you let me know. I'll call the person. And there itself, the child will also come. And he will say, I want 10 rupees. And you don't have a 10 rupee note in your pocket. You have a 100 rupee note. How much will you give the child? 100 rupees. You won't even ask why he is asked for. This is the difference between a das and a child. So similarly, do we also have a relationship with God? What is my relationship? I have to identify my relationship with God. Do I have a relationship with God? Are we all related in some way or the other to God? Yes or no? What is my relationship with God? That He is the Father and I am the child. Have we ever remembered Him as a child? Have we ever remembered Him as a father and me being the child? Have we ever remembered Him as a father? It was just singing in the prayers, Thou art my mother and father. That's all. But after that, we never remember Him as our father and mother. How can we say that? Just see, there is a son of a king, a prince. When he knows that his father is the king, how would he talk? How would he behave? How would he move about? How would he walk? How would he walk? In that intoxication of being a prince. If we are the children of the supreme authority, how should we behave? How should we talk? How should we walk? How should we interact with people? Is it worth of being the child of the Supreme? Can we call that yes, we are worthy? Our actions, our behavior are worthy enough to call ourselves as the children of God? No. We do not even have that intoxication that yes, I am the child of the Supreme. So where is it? There is no relationship. And when the relationship is not there, the love is also not there. So we have to first of all know Him, understand Him. So the introduction of the soul and the supreme soul, you got in the morning today. Now, we have to identify what is my relationship with Him. How many relationships can we have with Him? How many? Basically, we find that there are 6 relationships which are so close to human beings, whose remembrance is so natural in our lives. And that is why even the bhakts also experience the closeness of God on the basis of relationship itself. like Bhakta Prahlad, what relationship he had with God. He took him as his parent, as his father and mother, and he became the child. So every time he was protected, just as the child is protected by the parents. So similarly, Bhakta Prahlad also was protected. So the first relationship is of a mother and father with the child. As the child grows up, the second relationship he has is with his teacher. A teacher and a student. From where he gains knowledge, from where he gains lessons of life, some valuable lessons and valuable insights for life. Similarly, from God also, we get some valuable lessons in life. We get the knowledge from God. The third relationship is of a guru and shishya. A guru and his disciple. There is a difference between a guru and a teacher. The teacher gives us the education of the external world, but the guru would give the knowledge of the inner world, inner space. The guru would guide us to elevate ourselves spiritually, while a teacher would guide us to elevate ourselves in the physical world. So there is a difference between a guru and a teacher. The fourth relationship is what Arjuna had with him, of a friend. Therefore it is said, a friend in need is a friend indeed. God also maintained this relationship, sustained this relationship of a friend, and he stood by his side, guiding him every moment and enabling him to be victorious. So we can take God as a friend also. That is why we have stories in the world of Khuda Dost, God as a friend. The fifth relationship is what Mirabai had established with him, of a beloved. Taking God to be her companion, the most nearest and dearest companion. And he also sustained this relationship, where the bowl of poison became the bowl of nectar for her. Similarly, if we also take him as our beloved, the situation which are so poisonous in front of us, they also become like nectar and enable us to move forward in our life without any pain, without any sorrow. And the sixth relationship is what Sati and Suya had developed with God, taking God to be the child. And he also gave the happiness of being the child to the mother and father. So these are the most nearest and dearest relationships that we have. Six relationships. And all this relationship we can establish with God as well. And it's not difficult. We can enjoy the happiness of all the relationship. We can take the joy of every relationship. From time to time, during the whole day, we can celebrate different relationships with him and enjoy. Be in the ecstasy of the experience of that relationship. But this is where, which we shall see in detail tomorrow, of how to establish these relationships. That will be our lesson tomorrow. But sometimes many people say, we do prayers, isn't it? What is the difference between a prayer and meditation? Is there any difference? Yes, there is a great difference between a prayer and a meditation. Prayer is one-way communication, while meditation is a two-way communication. In prayer, what do? We go to the temple, fold our hands, speak what we have to say, and then bow our heads and come out. We do not stand there to listen whether he has got something to tell me or not. No time. While meditation means we speak to God, then make the mind silent. Listen to what He is telling me, because silence is the best form of communication. So we make the mind silent and we listen to God. So prayer means talking to God only, but meditation means talking and listening to God, what He has to tell me. This is the difference. It reminds me of a beautiful story that once there was a boy, a young boy. He used to take the cattle out for grazing. He used to take them into the jungles, and then when an open space would come, he would leave them to graze. And he would sit underneath a tree. Every day he used to talk to God. Being alone in the jungle, he used to talk in different ways every day. One day he had a thought. Just as I have let this cattle free and they are grazing on their own and I am sitting here by myself, similarly God also has let us into this world, be in this world, and we are all doing our own jobs. We are all sustaining ourselves. And now He must also be sitting somewhere alone by Himself. So, with his limited understanding, he was talking to God. You must be also alone. I am also alone here. I do not know where you are, but you know that I am here. Why don't you come over to this place? We shall talk. We shall gossip. We shall pass our time. We shall enjoy ourselves. So he was talking by himself, as if he is talking to God. Now it happened so that the priest was passing by, the priest of the temple. So when he heard this boy was grumbling to himself, he asked the boy, "Whom are you talking to?" So the boy said, "No one." "But you are grumbling? Whom are you talking to? It seems as if you are talking to somebody." So the boy said, "Well, I was talking to no one. I was talking to God only." So the priest of the temple said, "Talking to God? What did you talk to him?" So the boy narrated his feeling that I was telling him, "You must also be alone. I am also alone here. Why don't you come over here so that we can pass our time, we can enjoy, we can play, we can gossip with one another." So the priest got so angry and he started saying, "Is this the manners to talk with God? You know who He is. Is He free for you to pass His time and to pass your time? This is not the right way to talk to God. This is the most rude way to talk to Him." So the boy folded his hands and said, "Panditji, this is what I know. I do not know any other shlokas or any other things or the manners to talk to Him. So whenever I come into this jungle every day, being alone, I talk to Him in this manner only." So the Panditji said, "No, you can't talk in this way. You are accumulating sin. Why do you have to talk like Him, like this with Him in this manner?" So the boy said, "Well, you teach me how I should talk to Him, because every day I am free and I need to talk to someone. So I talk to Him. So you teach me." So the Panditji said, "Okay, sit down. I'll teach you." And then reciting a shloka from the scriptures, he started saying that shloka. Now this boy was illiterate. He never studied Sanskrit in his life. So each and every word reciting of that shloka, it took 2 hours for that Panditji to make him recite the whole shloka. Well, he was clever enough to recite the whole shloka. He learnt it by heart. So then the Pandit said, "Well, every day you have to talk in this manner. These are the manners to talk to God." And he left that place. When he reached the temple, he went in front of God and prayed to God, "God, today I have done such a charitable task. I have taught a boy the manners to talk to you. So there was a voice that was heard from the skies. Whatever you did was not good. So the Pandit was astonished. Why it's not good? I taught him how to talk to you. Why is it not good? So God said, well, every day that boy would come to the jungle, every day he would talk something or the other. Every day I was waiting for him. What will he tell me today? What will he tell me today? What will he talk to me today? And sometimes he used to talk in such a manner that I also used to laugh at what he used to talk to. It made me feel so happy. But now that you have recited that shloka, every day he will go on repeating the same words. And he doesn't even understand the meaning of it. And without understanding the meaning by reciting that shloka, which I am least interested, because he would not talk from his heart now. And I am not interested to listen to all that. I want something that should come out from the heart of the people. So today you have stopped him talking from the heart, which is not good. You have not done a good job. So are we also not doing the same thing, reciting the same prayers every day in front of God? Are we doing the same thing? If we are doing the same thing, reciting the same prayer every day, God is least interested to listen to those prayers. He wants to listen something that should come out from your heart, and that is meditation. Talk to him from the bottom of your heart and see how you will also enjoy, and he will also wait every day. What will my child talk to me today? It reminds me of another beautiful story that once a small boy went into the church. And small boys are very good at imitating. So there he saw the priest folding his hands and he was saying something, so his lips were moving. So the boy stood beside the priest. He also folded his hands and started moving his lips, constantly saying something. The priest saw the boy and was continuously thinking, what is he saying to God? But he was going on, continuously saying something from his lips. Very rigorously he was doing it. With like great feelings he was saying something. So after the prayer was over, the boy's prayers were also over. So that was more astonishing for the priest. So the priest asked the boy, what did you talk to God? So the boy asked him back, what did you talk to God? So the priest said, well, I was just saying my prayers. So the boy said, I was also saying my prayers. So priest thought, which prayer did he say? He's such a small boy, 5-year-old boy. So he asked again, which prayer did you say in front of God? So the boy asked him, which prayer did you say in front of God? So the priest said out his prayers. The boy started smiling and said, well, I was just reciting my ABCD in front of him. So the priest said, how can you recite ABCD in front of God? So the boy was very clever and he said, well, I do not know why what I have to recite in front of God. But I can say that in your prayers also, there were those 26 letters of ABCD only. And in my prayer also, there were those 26 letters of ABCD only. Maybe in your prayer, they were put in definite words. I said them all together and I told him, whichever way you like, put them according to the words and you accept my prayer. So whom will God love the most? The child, definitely. Because whatever you were saying was from the heart. So if you have nothing to say, you can recite your ABCD also, doesn't matter. He will love you equally. Because it will be coming out from your heart. This is meditation. Meditation is nothing so great. Meditation is nothing difficult. Even a small child can do meditation. Elderly person can also do his meditation. A sick person can also do meditation. A healthy person can also do meditation. Meditation is so easy that can be done by each and every person in the world, no matter what background he is from. Sometimes people ask us, do we have to suppress our thoughts or we have to go into a thoughtless stage? Is that meditation? No, meditation does not mean getting into a thoughtless stage, because we cannot be in a thoughtless stage forever. Generating thoughts is a constant or a natural process for the mind. If anything which is in a natural process, if we stop that process, that means we are exploiting it. That means we are ruining the system. So we can never make the mind thoughtless. And even if we suppress our thoughts for a few moments, maybe we will be in that state, but that is not good. Suppressing thoughts is not good. Just for an example, there is a river flowing. And a person would just come up and think, so much of water is just being wasted. So let me build a wall here so that I can make use of that water. So he builds up a wall, the water starts getting collected. But a time will come when the energy of the water will be greater than the energy of the wall, and it will break the wall and on the contrary create a disaster. So an intelligent person would come think of building a dam there, and he would construct a dam in such a way that the water is also accumulated. It does not cause any disasters also, but on the other hand, if he creates an irrigation system, he can water acres of land together. And if he puts up a hydroelectric power station there, he can generate electricity also, which will give light to so many villages. So that energy of water which was being wasted is utilized. But by simply building a wall is not a solution. So similarly, suppressing of thoughts is not a solution. But if I channelize my thought energy in a purposeful manner, in a positive manner, then I can utilize the energy of my thoughts in a creative way. And on the other hand, I can do meditation, or we can do a creative meditation, and we shall enjoy that creative meditation also. So this is what meditation is. Not getting into a thoughtless stage, but channelizing the energy of the thoughts in a purposeful, positive channel. The third, sometimes people ask us, is pranayama and meditation the same thing? No, pranayama is good for the body, for our physical health. But meditation is good for our mental health, for our spiritual health. So they are both two different things. This is when some people come up and ask another question. Is there any chanting of mantras in meditation? Do we have to chant something in meditation? No, we do not have to chant anything in meditation. Meditation and chanting of mantras is again two different things. Mantra, what does a mantra mean? Mantra, it is made up of two words. Man plus tra. Man means mind. Tra means prana, protection. The protection given to the mind to stop it from wandering away. So it's a piece of advice given to the mind. Just like from the word mantra, the word mantri comes. What does mantri mean? Mantri means an advisor who gives good advices, or maybe other advices. But mantra means a piece of advice given to the mind to stop it from wandering away into wasteful thinking. So every day if we give advice to some people, will they like? In today's world, do people like advices? Even a small child, if every day you get up in the morning and start advising the small child, don't speak lies, you have to speak the truth. 4 days or for a week, the child may listen to your advice. After a week, the child would say, I know what you are going to say. I do not have to speak lies, I have to speak the truth. Please stop your lecture. The child also does not like this advice every day. So will the mind appreciate the same piece of advice which we give? Supposing the advice that we give as a mantra to the mind, Om Namah Shivaya, go on chanting. Now how much does it enjoy in chanting this mantra? Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. How much do we enjoy? This tongue, the tongue also needs every day different varieties of food, isn't it? If we serve the same type of food every day, the same thing every day, all the 3 times, for morning, breakfast, afternoon, lunch and for dinner, same food every time, how much do we enjoy? After some time, maybe 15 days or month, we'll have that food because it's our favorite dish. But afterwards, we get bored with that dish. And we'll ask the person who is preparing, don't you know anything else besides this? Now, supposing the person who's preparing says, well, this is your favorite dish, so I've learned this dish. So now, throughout your life, you'll get this only, whenever you feel hungry. So how much do we appreciate that? So now, there is no need to have an argument with the person because the person has admitted, well, I've learned this only dish and so throughout your life you'll have to have this dish. Nothing else. So then, from the next day we start going out into the hotels, in the restaurants, to some relative's house maybe, or in some parties, on some weddings. Or if there is nothing, going out onto the beach where there are some fast food things served. So we have some fast food and come home. And when we come home, we'll say, well, I'm not feeling hungry today. Because we know it's the same food that is going to be served. So we say, we are not hungry. I don't want to have anything. So now the person who's preparing it has to eat it. So how many days will they eat? So, one day, the person who is preparing it goes to the market, gets a cookbook and seeing all the different recipes, start preparing different things with so much of hygienic cleanliness and everything according to the what is shown in the book, the ingredients are perfect and they prepare. And when you come home in the evening, it serves you. After eating that dish, what will you say? Very good? No. You'd say something is missing in this. It is not like that which we get in the hotels. Because that taste is different from this taste. Well, the person who has prepared would say, I saw in the book, whatever was mentioned in the book, accordingly I have put it. So there is nothing less, nothing more. But still we do not enjoy that taste. Why? In the hotel, in the restaurant, what was extra? That is the extra taste, which is not there in the home taste. The sweat. The sweat is the extra taste, which is not there in the home taste. So that was what was missing, the missing ingredient. And we enjoy that taste. Just imagine, we enjoy that taste. But if we got this taste from the beginning, we would not have enjoyed that taste. But because we did not get the good taste at home, that is why we have started enjoying that taste which we got in the restaurants. Similarly, the food for the mind is thoughts. If we go on giving the mind the same type of thoughts every day, Om Namah Shivaya, go on reciting. So, the mind will also recite for a few days, maybe 1 month, 2 months. And after 2 months, the mind will ask the soul, will I get something else besides this, or do I have to have this only? So the soul says, well, this is a Guru mantra, and throughout your life you have to recite this only, nothing else besides this. Whenever you get time, you have to have this food itself. You have to nourish yourself with this thoughts only. Om Namah Shiva, Om Namah Shiva. So now the mind has understood that arguing with the soul is no good. So what will the mind do? The mind will tell the mouth, you go on speaking, I will go out and wander somewhere. So the mouth goes on speaking, Om Namah Shiva, Om Namah Shiva, Om Namah Shiva, and the mind is wandering outside. Who has come? Who has gone? What is going on? What are people saying outside? Everything. So the mind is there. Is there any use of reciting such a mantra where the mind is not there? So in meditation, we do not give any mantras. We tell, whatever you want to talk to God, listen to God, speak from your heart and listen from your heart. That is meditation. Isn't it easy? And that is when the last question is meditation imagination about God? What is the difference between imagination and meditation? There is a great difference. If I ask you to remember your parents, bodily parents, is it easy or difficult? It is easy. The moment I say, remember your parents, you have their face in front of you and you start generating thoughts about them. And if somebody comes up and asks you, what are you doing? You would say, well, I was remembering my parents. You would not say, I was imagining my parents. Imagination is that which does not exist and you think about. That is imagination. But that which has its existence and you think about him, that is meditation. So the existence of God is there, and when you think about God, it is not imagination, it is remembering God, or that is meditation. So this is what meditation is. And tomorrow we shall see the various stages of meditation. How we can move about and experience the closeness with God. So now we shall sit in meditation for a few moments. Okay? Ready? If you have been listening since, I think, 4:30, you have been listening to lectures in the evening also. So if you feel you are a little bit tired, you can just stand up, stretch yourself, and then sit down so that we have good meditation. Just stand up a little bit. Stretch yourselves. Be fresh so that when we do meditation, you do not go into some other stage. And then if I ask you, did you enjoy your meditation? You say, well, it was very good. There was great peace, but that was Nidra Yoga and not meditation, not Raj Yoga. So we do not have to do Nidra Yoga. We have to do Raj Yoga. Be seated as a Raja. Have full control over your senses. So please sit down. So we shall sit in meditation for a few moments. A small suggestion. Those who would like to get up and go out can go out now itself. During meditation, please do not disturb others. Because maybe you want to go out, but when you are moving, there are so many people who are getting disturbed. So let others enjoy meditation. If you have some problem, you can get up now and go out. But during meditation, nobody will get up. Okay? So for a few moments, sit alert. But do not tighten your senses, tighten your limbs. Be relaxed. Keep the body loose. Keep the eyes open. Focus on the point of light in front of you. For a few moments, let us turn our attention from the external world and focus within. Through my mind's eye, I visualize myself as a point of light. As an embodiment of light, this body is just like a costume that I have put on to play my role. But I am separate from the physical body. I am the master of the physical body. Slowly and gradually, I take my mind and intellect on a spiritual journey and stabilize in the consciousness of being a spiritual entity. My original form is so pure. I can see the light radiating of purity all around me. Such a beautiful form. I stabilize in my original nature, that is of peace. I am a peaceful being. Peace is my original nature, my real identity. I can feel the vibrations of peace around me. My mind is becoming silent. My thoughts are calming down. There is great happiness in this peaceful state. There is an experience of supersensuous joy. As I stabilize in this state, I can feel the bliss. And my mind and intellect are filled with the power of bliss. There is immense power in this state. I empower myself with the power of peace.
खुलते ही आँख हमें मिलते हर पल वो साथ मेरे चलते कितना वो प्यार हमें करते उनकी पलकों में हम पलते हम खुश नसीब उनको पाकर हम खुश नसीब उनको पाकर जिंदगी हमारी गाती है भगवान हमारा साथी है भगवान हमारा साथ।